Adventures in Research. Out of our earth came a strange black stone. It did not shine like gold. It did not sparkle like diamonds. But it wrought a strange power over the minds and manners of men. And it pointed the way to a great adventure. Men called it Lodestone, the stone of magic. This is Jim Westover speaking for Paul Shannon and bringing you another transcribed story of science by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Today, it is the story of the lodestone, that strange black ore of iron which mystified the ancients and which man still strives to understand. At least 3,000 years ago, in the unknown cavern that is antiquity, men knew of a strange, dark stone that held mysterious powers. How and where the discovery was first made, we shall never know. But out of the earth, in a district in Thessaly called Magnesia, came this hard, black stone. It looked like almost any other stone, but somehow someone found it wasn't. This particular black stone had a power of its own.
Aye, it is a magic stone. And to those of us who study the stars and foretell the destinies of men, a stone can speak. It tells us of the future of men, of nations, of the world.
Step nearer. Be not afraid. The magic stone will look with kindness on you. See what magic it contains. I place it here. I place these bits of iron over here and...
Oh, it moves, it moves. The iron moves.
Verily. The stone draws them toward it. Did I not say it was a magic stone? It is alive. And the man who wears such a stone will live too. For with such a stone, man can be immortal.
And the black stone that drew iron to it became a stock in trade for every soothsayer, astrologist, magician, and alchemist that plied his nefarious trade in the Middle Ages. And sometime in the 11th century, someone found out a very useful bit of information about the magic stone.
The magnesian stone that is used to cure the ills of the stupid may not be so stupid after all. Today I witnessed a most unusual experiment. I saw the stone floated on the water in a small jar. It always came to rest in a definite way, the length of it always resting in a northerly and southerly direction.
And that was a very useful bit of information. Up until that time, directions on the earth were found by the sun during the day and by the stars at night. And ship captains of the Middle Ages were far more apt to curse their stars than thank them.
Aye, never again will I put out from sight of land. As heaven is my witness, never a star we saw for 2 whole weeks. We knew not where we were nor where lay our destination. Never again, never.
But here now was a hard, black stone that would always twist itself around to lay north and south. If nights were starless, one merely looked at the magic stone and knew the direction. And old Saxon sea voyagers named it the lodestone, meaning leading stone, because it helped them find a way. Perhaps it had a soul. Perhaps it was magic. But it helped them sail farther from shore than ever. And best of all, it helped them home again. But if men of the sea were not too curious about the magic stone, others were. One was a strange wanderer named Peter the Pilgrim.
Brother, I have come to preach the word, for I too am a voice crying in the wilderness, and I carry the message of truth to the ends of the earth. Oh, innkeeper, another cup of mead for a parched throat and true man. Will you allow me to have him bring some for you, brother?
Aye. Is a drink fit for the gods?
There is but the one god, brother. Do not use his name so lightly.
Your pardon. You've traveled a far pace, pilgrim?
Many miles from where I last slept. But my lodestone keeps my feet true, as the one god keeps my heart straight.
Eh? Never heard of using a lodestone on dry land. Are they not for ships and such?
This is one I fashioned myself. I placed the lodestone in a wooden cup, which floats in a bowl of water.
Oh, never have I seen such a device.
I fashioned it myself to keep my head and hands busy and away from the world's temptations. Ah, here is the mead.
Fashioned it? But those lines that cross...
Let me explain. I first rounded a piece of lodestone into the shape of a ball. Then I placed a needle on it and allowed the needle to come to rest. Then I drew a line on the ball, showing the needle's direction. Thus I did again and again. Do not consume your mead so rapidly, my brother, for the bee that made the honey labored too nobly for such reward.
You drew more lines on the lodestone?
I moved the needle to other places on the ball of lodestone, and each time noted the direction. Thus I labored till I had lines passing round the entire ball.
Look like lines on a ship's map.
Indeed, brother, indeed. I discovered, as you are now, that the lines all crossed one another at two points on the globe, at opposite ends, just as the meridians of a map pass through the north and south poles.
Odd's blood.
Brother, I have cautioned you of your language. I shall now take leave of your company and mind you to watch your tongue ere you are sent to perdition. Good day.
So, some say, the compass was thus invented, and the term pole used to describe the points of the lodestone. And for the next two centuries, the magic stone remained just that. To many, a stone with a soul. To some, a precious aid to navigation. And then came the golden age of England, Queen Elizabeth's reign, and a certain Dr. William Gilbert of Colchester took an interest in the hard black stone.
So the stone has the property of attraction and of pointing north. But why? What makes this stone different from ordinary stones? Where does it derive this power?
If you would but stop raising your voice, William, perhaps I could answer some of those questions.
Excuse me, Stanley, but don't tell me of this trumpery and witchcraft. The stone has a soul.
Nay, nay. The Magnesius stone points to the pole star, which can be found in the constellation of the Little Bear. Therefore, the star, or perhaps that constellation, exerts some pressure or pull on the stone, as a man in a tug of war does on a rope.
Confound it, Stanley, that's no answer. That's only a supposition.
What would you then? Supposition or superstition?
Facts, Stanley, facts. Not idle tales and trumpery.
You might probe the soul of the stone. I understand it has one.
Well, perhaps I shall at that.
Welcome, William. Draw up a chair to the fireplace and tell me of your soul-seeking.
I may have found out more than you reckon, Stanley. I have repeated the work of Peter the Pilgrim, marking off the stone with a needle. And I have discovered it is at the poles where the power or virtue is concentrated.
So, the good doctor has the soul located.
Hear me out. The poles are of opposite nature, one unto the other. One seeking north and one seeking south.
So you know no more now than you did when last I saw you.
I haven't yet finished. I floated the magnet, as did Peter the Pilgrim. Then, holding in my hand another magnet, I held its north-seeking pole near the south-seeking pole of the floating magnet.
And did it bite you?
No. But it swerved around.
Oh.
The south-seeking pole of the floating magnet was attracted to the north-seeking pole of the one in my hand. But when I did the same with the opposite end of the magnet, one put the other to flight.
Excellent, William. Excellent. But I presume you were attempting to discover why the lodestone sets itself in north and south directions.
Something in the earth, I believe.
'Tis the sky. The sky, Doctor. The constellation of the bear. But I would not plague you with my fripperies. Hire yourself back to your experiments.
And Dr. Gilbert did. Was it the earth that attracted the lodestone, or the sky? To prove this point, he made a simple but positive experiment. And as he wrote in his notebook,
by using a ball of lodestone and resting another magnet thereupon, I note that the magnet set itself in a direction pointing to the poles on the ball of lodestone. If I assume that the ball of lodestone is the earth, is not the force of attraction the earth and not the sky? The earth itself must be the magnet.
With such knowledge, the lodestone became increasingly valuable to any voyager. Dr. Gilbert almost single-handedly brought the magic stone out of the Dark Ages and into its recognized niche as an essential device. Through his own curiosity and his solitary experiments, he did, in one sense, find the soul of the lodestone. But the adventure and research of Dr. William Gilbert did not end here. For this obscure physician to a queen missed lasting fame by only a hair's breadth. His name might have been handed down through the ages and been a part of our daily conversation instead of resting dimly and quietly as the foster father of magnetism. Except for, well, one evening, Dr. Gilbert rejoined his cynical companion.
What, oh, William? Well, we haven't had the pleasure of your company for some time.
Oh, Stanley. No, I've been experimenting again.
Not the lodestone, pray.
No, the other stone, the amber.
Huh.
It has the power, when rubbed, to attract certain objects to itself. I thought it might be magnetic, too. But it's something else. Something I can't quite explain.
Oh? I know that rubbed amber can...
Not only the amber stone, Stanley. Huh? Other bodies, such as glass and a number of gems, behave in a similar way when rubbed with wool or silk or hair, for that matter.
Not magnetism.
No, it's something different. A strange effect.
Well, if you have discovered something, William, you ought to give this strange effect a name.
Name? Oh, yes, I have thought of it.
And after all, Gilbert, if you discovered it, why not call it, Gilbertism? That would do it.
I hardly believe so, Stan.
Why not?
I didn't really discover it. The Greeks knew amber had this effect. I thought to give it a Greek name.
But Gilbertism?
Not Gilbertism, Stanley. Now, the name I've chosen is electricity.
And that's today's story by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Join us again next week for another transcribed story by Dr. Thomas on Adventures in Research.